Welcome to this episode of Out of the Best Books, the podcast where we deep dive into classic literature and have conversations about what we've learned and discovered along the way. We love all things books and reading, and we want to share our love of the classics with you. We hope to inspire you to read along with us and join in the conversation. I'm Amity.
And I'm Laura. Let's get started. Okay, this is our third episode of Anne of Green Gables. I'm so excited. I think I love it more with each episode.
I do too, because it's another slow burn book. And maybe that's one of the trademarks of a classic book, is that it just, it's a slow burn. It just gets better and better and better as you go along, because the writer got more and more comfortable with their subject matter and just got better and better. So much happens in these 10 chapters. We're just going to be like all over the map, and we're going to be covering several years as well. So up to this point, it's really only been what, like maybe a year? I think.
Yeah, they just had her a year.
Since Anne came and joined Marilla and Matthew. So it's taken us to chapter 20. And then from 21 to 30, we cover like another 2 years or so. So chapter 21, it's the very end of the school year. And I just have to, like, first of all, Mrs. Lynde, Rachel Lynde, is just full of a sort of like proverbs. They're anecdote. I don't know. She just has all these little sayings and phrases. Something that Mrs. Lynde says is, there's nothing but meetings and partings in this world, which is kind of true. But Anne is kind of sad because it's the end of the school year and Mr. Phillips is leaving. And it's so, I don't know. I just about died because Mr. Phillips is like saying goodbye to everyone. Anne has never liked Mr. Phillips, but she can't help but cry because everybody else is crying. Like, she had no intention of crying, but everyone else was crying. So she began to cry. And then when they're on their home, Carrie Sloan kept saying every few minutes, the time has come for us to part. And that would start everybody off again, just crying. I was just dying. I was like, I can so relate to that. Like, as a kid, you sort of have weird thrilling delight in like something new, just inexpressibly sad and just making you cry. It's sort of satisfying in a weird way. And so when you find that thing that makes you cry, you like keep thinking about it over and over again. So it brings up fresh tears. And that's exactly what all the girls were doing. They were like walking home from school and they kept like re-quoting Mr. Phillips, this certain line that made everybody cry. And so Carrie Sloan would say that and it would make them all just cry fresh tears. It just, I don't know. It was so funny. I can just imagine that. These little girls just walking home from school and just everything bursting into tears all over again.
And they don't even like him.
They don't even like him. Like, not at all. He's such a creeper and a weirdo, but there's just something about just that separation that makes him bad. But one upside is that they met the new minister and his wife, Mr. and Mrs. Allen. They're both quite young. They just got married and Anne met them, and they're going to be living with Mrs. Lynde for a little while until their house is ready. And so everybody in Avonlea who had ever borrowed anything from Lynde suddenly remembers they'd borrowed it and has to return it within the next few days so that they can, just as an excuse to get a glimpse of the new minister and his wife. Everybody's kind of fascinated. They talk about how they kind of judge everybody. They'd sort of gone through this almost an audition period of ministers. They'd gone through quite a few. They'd had Mr. Bentley for years and years and years, and then he left and had all these others that they just weren't really up to par. And then this guy came along. He was just perfect. And just fell in love with Mrs. Allen right away. And she is a key figure throughout a good chunk of the rest of this book because she's just so sweet. She's so good. And she's somebody that Anne relates. She just immediately loves Anne. And so Anne loves her. And because she loves Anne, just unconditionally, Anne wants to emulate her and wants to be like her and wants to learn from her.
Yeah, Mrs. Allen tells him, she said that we could ask her any questions we liked. And I asked ever so many. I'm good at asking questions, Marilla. Marilla's probably like, yeah, I'm aware.
She's like, I believe you. I love it. And she even says, she's like, I'd like to be a Christian if I could be one like Mrs. Allen. I didn't know that religion was such a cheerful thing. What a great perspective. So they decide to invite Mr. and Mrs. Allen over for tea. But they do say they're not going to tell Matthew about it, because if they do, he's going to find an excuse to not be there, because it would already make him nervous to have a minister in the house. But then to have a minister and his wife, he would just like be a wreck, because he does not know what to do around women. It makes him so nervous. Anne wants to make a cake for it, and they spend a couple of days just preparing everything, this scrubbing the house top to bottom, making all this food. I'm just going to list out all the food that they're making for this little party of like five people. Okay. Jellied chicken and cold tongue, which sounds very, very strange. I'm a little bit, there's a little bit of morbid curiosity within me, but two kinds of jelly, red and yellow, and whipped cream and lemon pie and cherry pie and three kinds of cookies and fruitcake and Marilla's famous yellow plum preserves that she keeps especially for ministers and pound cake and layer cake and biscuits, as Alfred said, and new bread and old both in case the minister is dyspeptic and can't eat them. So much food. I was like, holy crap. But it's a big deal to have the minister and his wife over. So they're just going to pull out all the stops of the tea party so that she can make this layer cake. And she pays such close attention. You know, she's ruined things in the past. She's tried to learn from it, and she's worked really hard on becoming a better baker and cook. The cake turns out beautifully. It just is perfectly feathery. It rose just right. She decorates everything just beautifully and gets compliments from Mr. and Mrs. Allen on how well everything looks. Everything is going really well. Anne's layer cake goes around, which she layers it with jelly, which I think is interesting. I guess that was the thing. Once her cake goes around, Mrs. Allen is pretty full, and she's like, no, I'm okay. But Marilla's like, Anne made the cake especially for you. She's like, oh, okay, well, then I'll have some. She takes a bite, and she gets this look on her face. Like, there is definitely something wrong, but she's not, you know, she's trying to hide the look. She's not going to say anything. So, of course, Marilla quickly takes the cake. And she's like, Shirley, what on earth did you put into that cake? Nothing but what the recipe said, Marilla. Well, she put what she thought was vanilla in it. And it was actually anodyne liniment. It's just, Anne has like the worst luck in the world, because what had happened is Marilla, and it kind of was Marilla's fault, like, let's be real. But the anodyne liniment, the bottle had broken. And so she had put what was left into an old vanilla bottle to store it that way. And just looked at the bottle and it said vanilla. She didn't smell it. I don't know how you could, like, vanilla has a pretty distinct smell. And I've never smelled anodyne liniment, but I would imagine it does too. But she was just carried away, poured it in there, and totally destroyed the cake. And goes up to her room. She's completely distraught. She just buries her face in her pillow. And she's like, she hears footsteps on the stairs, somebody come in her room. She's like, I never want to see them again. I can't show my face anywhere. I'm so ashamed. They're going to think that I tried to poison them. She's like, please tell them I'm so sorry. Mrs. Allen is actually the one that's in the room. And she's like, well, why don't you tell me yourself? You know, she's like, don't cry like this. It's all just a funny mistake that anybody might make. And Anne says, oh no, it takes me to make such a mistake. She says, you mustn't cry anymore, but come down with me and show me your flower garden. Anne thinks that it was really providential that Mrs. Allen was a kindred spirit. Anne found that she had enjoyed the evening more than could have been expected in that terrible incident. I love this. She says, Marilla, isn't it nice to think that tomorrow is a new day with no mistakes in it yet? And Marilla says, I never saw your beat for making mistakes, Anne. And she says, well, the good thing about me is that I never make this mistake twice. And she's like, there's got to be a limit to the mistakes a person can make. So that's a comforting thought. In the next chapter, which chapter 22, it's called Anne Invited Out to Tea. But basically, she's invited now to Mrs. Allen's, because Mrs. Allen, she is over the little Sunday school class. And so she invites each of the kids in her class in turn to come have tea with her. So she goes and she gets to have tea with Mrs. Allen. And she just said that they had a heart-to-heart talk. And Mrs. Allen tells her that she was also a dunce at geometry. And she's also found out that there's going to be a new teacher at this school. And her name is Miss Muriel Stacy. Mrs. Lynde is kind of scandalized because they've never had a female teacher in Avonlea, and she thinks it's dangerous. Something that I wanted to say right now is how much we notice this interesting morality that everybody is living by. All these things they're very, very determined are so wrong that we look at now and we're like, okay, maybe we're all just living in absolute, like, I mean, maybe we are. Maybe we're all just living in absolute sin. The fact that we go to plays and women are teachers that we enjoy things, we look forward to things, all those things that we just kind of take for granted. They're constantly saying, well, that's a sin. It's a sin to think too much about that. It's a sin to think about what you're wearing. It's a sin to think about how you look. It's a sin to think about wanting to go to a play or doing well in something. And like, wow, we are just all steeped in sin. That is what's wrong. Not really. But it's just, it's interesting to see that sort of point of view and that perspective. I feel like it would be a really stressful way to live.
Well, and it's like they all have their own made up.
It is. It's like, what is that based on? There's like, well, that makes me feel happy, so I'm sure it's sinful. You know what I'm saying? It's like, this is a satisfying feeling. It must be sinful. Yee! Jeez, you know, that's a little wild.
And we do that in our church too, right? Where certain, we've talked about that before, like the cards, or like certain families think that like drinking caffeine is bad. I mean, we just make up our own rules for what's a sin and what's not. And it's really funny.
It really is. And we totally do. And everybody does that in their own way, I think.
These people really like to do it.
They do.
Yeah. And the other thing I loved in those two chapters was the way that Mrs. Lind knows that the minister and his wife are good. Let's see, because the minister's wife's people are respectable and all of the women are good housekeepers.
It's like, yes.
Mrs. Lynn says the sound doctrine in the man and good housekeeping in the woman make an ideal combination for a minister's family. That's what's important, is her house being clean.
Yeah, I know. I was like, well, I didn't guess I couldn't be a minister's wife. All right. That's fine. My life would want to win.
Right? So chapter 23, Anne comes to grief in an affair of honor. Oh, yes, this chapter. The kids have started daring each other to do things. So it started with the boys, but now the girls are doing it. And Anne dares Josie Pye to walk along the fence boards, which she does super easily. She just does it like it's nothing. So then she dares Anne to walk the ridge pole of Mr. Barry's roof. They're also, these girls are all so dramatic when they, like with everything that happens, right? Is it Josie?
Oh, yeah.
Pye that is the one that goes into hysterics? I don't think it is. I think it's Ruby Gillis. Is the one that's always in hysterics whenever anything happens. And yeah, we'll find out here. Yes, it is Ruby. Diana says, first Diana begs her not to do it. Don't you do it, Anne. You'll fall off and be killed. Never mind, Josie Pye. It isn't fair to dare anybody to do anything so dangerous. So she's like, don't even care. Don't even listen to Josie. Don't do it. And Anne is also so dramatic. She's like, I must do it.
Oh, yes.
My honor is at stake. I shall walk the ridgepole, Diana, or perish in the attempt. If I am killed, you are to have my pearl bead ring. It's hilarious. Like, I'm going to do it because I have
my
to.
My last will and testament.
Yes, I might die, but I'm doing it. So she gets up there and of course she falls off, but luckily she falls off on the other side of the roof, which is like a lower, it stoops lower. And so it's less of a fall. All the girls run to the other side of the, whatever it is. It's the ridge pole of, what is it, his house? Or is it like a barn maybe? I don't know. But they run to the other side, but Ruby, the kitchen house. So Ruby stays there because she's hysterical. But all the other girls are yelling.
She always is.
Yes. So Diana's yelling, Anne, are you killed? Well, Anne had hurt her ankle. And at this point, she knows that she's not going to be able to walk home. So they go ask Mr. Barry to take her home. When they get home, so he's carrying her. And there's this like troop of girls that are following him over to Green Gables. But when they get there, Marilla's outside picking apples. When she sees Anne being carried, she worries, and then she has this realization, and I love this. It says, at that moment, Marilla had a revelation. In the sudden stab of fear that pierced to her very heart, she realized what Anne had come to mean to her. She would have admitted that she liked Anne, nay, that she was very fond of Anne. But now she knew, as she hurried wildly down the slope, that Anne was dearer to her than anything on earth. And she says, Mr. Barry, what has happened to her? She gasped, more white and shaken than the self-contained, sensible Marilla had been for many years. Isn't that just so sweet? She's this like composed woman that realizes in that moment how much she loves this little girl and like all of a sudden loses all this composure, becomes a little bit more like Anne, I guess. Of course, even though she has this realization, she needs to make sure that Anne knows that what she did was pretty stupid. And she says, I knew if you went to that party that you were going to do something stupid. Mr. Barry lays her down on the sofa, and that's when they realize that Anne had fainted. So Matthew goes and gets the doctor, and they find out that Anne had broken her ankle, and she'd fainted because of the pain, which I can't even imagine.
Yeah. I've never broken a limb
or anything, so seems like it would hurt.
Tate broke his fibula in November at his last football game. He's a very tough kid. He's a very strong kid. So, but I have never seen him like shake so badly and just be in so much incredible pain. He's not a kid who cries. He didn't cry. His entire body was just shaking so badly. He was in so much pain. I also have never broken a bone except probably my toes. But so I would imagine it is extremely painful.
Yeah. I don't want to experience it, but. So Anne, I love that Anne asks Marilla, well, like, don't you feel sorry for me? And she says, obviously it was her own fault. She says, I'd have stayed on good firm ground and let them dare away. Such absurdity. So Anne mentions that she is so lucky that she has such a good imagination because it's going to help her while she's laid up. And she's going to have to be laid up for like 7 weeks or something. But while she is, she has visitors every day. They bring her books, flowers, news from the school. And that, I think that's when she really finds out how many, that like she has tons of friends and that everybody likes her. I love that Mrs. Allen comes to visit her 14 times. Never once says, I hope this will teach you something. Like everybody else is saying, you know, well, yeah.
Mrs. Lind and
yeah. Marilla. Mrs. Lind. Yeah. Yeah.
And like, Mrs. Lind tells her that she says this in a kind way, but she's also... Now, this is when the new teacher had come. And so since she can't go see the new teacher, she hears great things about this lady, Miss Stacy. Mrs. Lind always has something to say about the teacher being a woman, which I think is really funny. And it sounded like that she was kind of says that she's a good teacher because she's a woman. But I'm not sure because later on, she says more stuff about it being a bad situation because she's a teacher's a lady. But it was confusing to me. And then the last thing Marilla says to her is, there's one thing plain to be seen, Anne, and that is that your fall off the Barry roof hasn't injured your tongue at all.
No change there.
She's so funny. Chapter 24, Miss Stacy and her pupils get up a concert. So now it's October, and finally it's time for Anne to go back to school. She goes back and loves Miss Stacy, just loves her. She comes home and tells Marilla that she had recited Mary Queen of Scots at school, and it had made Ruby Gillis's blood run cold. I liked what she said. Marilla says, Mrs. Lind said that it made her blood run cold to see the boys climbing to the very tops of those big trees on Bell's Hill after crow's nests last Friday. I wonder at Miss Stacy for encouraging it. So they're just they're like kind of questioning her. So another thing they like about Miss Stacy is that they do nature studies. She has the kids write these compositions, and I love that she says, I write the best ones. Marilla says, it's very vain of you to say so then. You'd better let your teacher say it. And Anne says, but she did say it, Marilla. And I'm indeed not vain about it. So in one paragraph, she goes from compositions to being wanting to be a Red Cross nurse and then to wanting to be a missionary. But she doesn't think she's going to be good enough to be a missionary. She's not righteous enough. But then she goes on to...
I think you have to be naturally good.
You have to be actually good. Is that what she says?
Yeah, something like that.
But then she goes on to the physical culture exercises that they're doing. And I thought this was funny. They make you graceful and promote digestion. I've never thought of exercise being something to promote digestion. I mean, I guess like shake the food down.
Yeah, totally. Well, just make all of your organs and everything just work better for sure.
So the one big project that they have going on is that all of the scholars, that's what they call the kids, they must call them like a certain age kids or maybe the older ones or something, are preparing a concert for the evening of Christmas, and they want to raise money for the school flag. And of course, Marilla thinks that it's all silly. She's super excited about it. And I think it's just hilarious how she's explaining what they're preparing for the concert. She says, and we're about to have a tableau at the last. Faith, hope, and charity. Diana and Ruby and I are to be in it, all draped in white with flowing hair. I'm to be Hope with my hands clasped so and my eyes uplifted. I'm going to practice my recitations in the garret.
Don't be alarmed if you hear me groaning. I have to groan heartrendingly in one of them. And it's really hard to get up a good artistic groan, Marilla. Isn't that hilarious? Like,
oh, she's so dramatic.
Don't be alarmed if I'm groaning.
I would have loved to hear that.
I know. And then she talks about groaning later when they do the concert. And she says, oh, Marilla, I know you're not so enthusiastic about it as I am, but don't you hope your little Anne will distinguish herself? And Marilla says, all I hope is that you'll behave yourself. I'll be heartily glad when all this fuss is over and you'll be able to settle down. You are simply good for nothing just now with your head stuffed full of dialogues and groans and tableaus. As for your tongue, it's a marvel it's not clean worn out. Finally, she talks to Matthew about it outside, and Matthew is happy to not have anything to do with bringing her up. And then I love that Marilla calls it that he spoils her. The last sentence says, but it was not such a bad arrangement after all. A little appreciation sometimes does quite as much good as all the conscientious bringing up in the world. I love that.
It is true. It is like, true. Yeah.
He's like, we have to love her.
Yeah, absolutely. Something that I wanted to point out there that I think was really interesting, it does not explicitly say it, but really this is around the time that Charlotte Mason was putting together all of her method of education. And so I think it's really interesting that that's really what Miss Stacy is implementing, the Charlotte Mason method of teaching, which includes lots of field studies, the nature studies, the observations, climbing up and grabbing a crow's nest and really looking at it and then writing about it. It includes the physical education aspect and exercising the bodies, and it includes recitations and narration and things like that. So I thought that was really interesting. I was like, she doesn't say, oh yeah, Miss Stacy was using the Charlotte Mason method, but this is about the time that she wrote all of her books and put it out there. Are you familiar with that? Have you heard about the Charlotte Mason method?
No.
So, I mean, it's something that's quite popular in homeschool realms, but there's some schools that also try to implement it, but it's just trying to educate the whole brain and get everything involved in the learning process. But she's very heavy on the nature study and how much you can learn just by observing and then writing about or painting nature. Know, grabbing that nest and observing it. Anyway, so I thought that was really interesting. I was like, I'm pretty sure that's what she's doing and referring to. So the next couple of chapters are so funny. So chapter 25 is called Matthew Insists on Puffed Sleeves. Who would have thunk? So remember, this little concert is coming up, right? That all the kids are going to be performing, and Marilla is like, but Matthew has observed Anne with all of her friends. They're all over at Green Gables and they're like practicing for the concert. And he's like, sees that there's something different. First of all, she just is so vivacious. She just stands out a good way that way. But then he realizes that she also kind of stands out in a way that he just can't put his finger on, but it's maybe not as good. So he literally sits and smokes for 2 hours, which makes Marilla really angry. But at the end of the hour, he has realized why Anne is sort of set apart from her friends. And it's because she is dressed differently. They're all very fashionable little girls. They have colorful clothes. They've got puffy sleeves. And Anne wears very just dark, very plain dresses made up in an extremely sensible, practical way, not fashionable in any sense of the word. And it's like, you know what? She's so lively. She's so fun. She's so wonderful that nobody really cares. But Matthew sees that and he knows that she cares. And she does. She's tried to move past it and everything, but kids know, you know, and they don't like to feel super, super different that way. And so he notices and he's like, why does Marilla keep her so just plain and soberly young? And so he decided he's going to do something about it. And so he's going to go into Carmody, the nearest town that has like big stores, and he's going to go to a store that he doesn't normally go to because he doesn't want to deal with these two girls that work at Mr. Buller's store, because he cannot handle females at any age except for Anne. And so he's going to go to the Lawson's store. So he walks into Lawson's store, and lo and behold, there is a woman working at the desk. And she's quite a stunning woman, and he just can't even handle it. And so she's like, what can I help you with, Mr. Cuthbert? And he's like, okay. And remember, this is December. It's winter. And he's like, a garden rake. She's like, okay. So she's like, we think we have a couple left. So she goes and gets him his garden rake. He starts to leave and realizes he needs to pay for the garden rake, turns around. And he's like, hayseed. She's like, well, we don't carry hayseed in December. He's like, oh, that's true. That's true. How about sugar? He gets 20 pounds of this kind of grainy, awful brown sugar and still does not leave with what he came for. He's just so nervous, so just off. So he decides that he's going to go to Mrs. Lynde. He's like, I can't talk to Marilla about it. I'm going to go talk to Mrs. Lynde. She's also the only other woman that he can actually talk to. And so he talks to Mrs. Lynde about making a dress for her, getting some material for a dress for Anne. And she's like, yes, and I will make it up for her since you want it to be a surprise for her for Christmas, right? And which is so sweet. I was like, holy moly, like that's amazing. But then that's when Matthew, so I've noticed that sleeves are a little different now. And Rachel's like, you want Anne's dress to be fashionable, don't you? She's like, I got you.
So yeah. Oh,
he does. And it's like the sweetest thing. She makes it just beautiful. She makes it, it's like this brown dress that I'm sure looks beautiful with Anne's red hair. And it's made in the latest fashion with puffed sleeves and a tucked waist. And it's just lovely. And so he gives that to Anne for Christmas. And she has no words except that it's exquisite. And Marilla thinks it's silly because she doesn't think Anne needs another dress, but it's perfect. And this is what she wears for the concert. That brings us to the concert. Everything goes really well. Everybody just performs so well. They practiced hard, did really well. And Anne just gushes over Diana, who had sung a solo. And Diana gushes over Anne's, oh, she says, your recitations just brought down the house, Anne. So I just love it. They are so thrilled for each other. There's no like competition between them. They both did well and they both just have so much praise for the other. I love that. And I love what Anne said. She's like, she said that she was so scared when she got up. But then she said, then I thought of my lovely puffed sleeves and took courage. I knew that I must live up to those sleeves, Diana.
So cute. You
know, whatever works. Whatever works. I know. And Marilla and Matthew come away and they're both very proud. But Marilla was like, well, I would never tell her. But yes, I was very proud of her. She did awesome. And Matthew's like, well, I was proud of her and I did tell her. You know, we find out that Anne is going to be 13 pretty soon. They're going to do everything that they can to make sure she gets the best education that they can help her to get, which means Queen's College in a couple years, which is a teacher training school, which is kind of a jumping off point, it sounds like, because it's like you can go study to be a teacher, but then you can go on to study other things. But that's like your initial way to kickstart education as well as have a way to make some money along the way is what it seems like.
Were there any clothes that like with Anne's puffed sleeves that you absolutely had to have or like that you remember as a kid wanting?
So as soon as I got into middle school, I saw the clothes that the kids were wearing. You do. You want to fit in. At the time, we didn't have, you know, my parents didn't have very much money, but even if they did, they weren't really of the mindset of like, they just didn't care about us dressing fashionably, I think. And so I kind of just did the best that I could, but I certainly saw what was fashionable and wanted to be that way. I just wasn't.
It wasn't a priority.
Yeah. I would say that they were a little more like Marilla and.
I mean, my parents were kind of in between. My dad had nothing to do with it. It was all my mom. And the most I remember was like fourth, fifth grade. And the big thing, this is going to show my age, but the big thing was like esprit. Everybody at school had an esprit bag. And that's what they would carry to and from school. And so I had one of those.
Okay.
Then the other big thing was a Guess watch. And the watch had like full watch bands or whatever bands. I never got one of those. I think we got like a fake one at one point.
Okay.
The cheap version. Yeah, we had like LA Gear tennis, high top tennis shoes, and the sides were like cut and then fanned. So like the underside was colorful. We just, Yeah, it was the '80s.
Well, now that you're, I do remember something very in particular. Finish your story, and then I'll tell
No,
you.
it's just funny, like to just
Yeah.
remember, and I don't remember that being that way, like later, like in high school, or you know what I mean? It was just mostly in elementary school, maybe middle school a little bit, but go
Think
ahead.
middle school very much, and there's certainly the things that were very fashionable and like on trend in high school, but it seemed like, I don't know, there were so many different ways that people went, because there were like the emos and the goths and then very preppy, and then the cheerleaders and the jocks and whatever, and everybody kind of had their own sort of style. And so
Well, when you're in elementary school, there's so few kids that I don't know. It's like a big focus on those, like very few that are really think they're special. You
yeah, that's
want to
true.
be like
That's
them.
true.
But then once you get to middle school, it
Yeah.
kind
And
of
you,
breaks up a little. And then even more in high school.
well, middle school is awful. But then, yeah, in high school, it does seem like it's a little better, just because people start to go, well, this is who I am, and I don't give a care about anybody else. One thing that does really stand out, Doc Martens were a huge thing, which they're totally coming back, which is hilarious. They were a huge thing. And that is all that I wanted. Just a pair of Doc Martens. I thought they were so cute. There were the rip-off kinds from Walmart or Payless.
Yeah.
Payless is not even a thing anymore. But you could totally tell they didn't look anything like the real thing. And so I was like, I don't, sorry, I don't want that. It's cheap.
Yeah.
I wanted a real pair of Doc Martens. And so I had saved up money, and we were in Christensen's one day, because that was like a nice store. Not here, but the town I grew up, their Doc Martens were on sale. And one particular pair that I just loved, they were on sale. And my mom was like, I will pay half if you pay the other half. And I was like, okay. I was so excited about this pair of Doc Martens. My dad was furious.
Oh,
He
God.
seriously sat me down and lectured me for like an hour on what a waste of money that was, and how his job was to make sure that we were fed and clothed, but he didn't need to do anything beyond that. It was like, this was just extra. It was kind of crazy. That's what happened. If you ever listen to this episode, I'm sorry. That is the truth. That's what happened. And it was ridiculous.
Did you
All
have
of
to take
my,
them back?
no, he
Okay.
wanted to. I was like, no. I was a seventh grader, but I was like, that was mine that I saved. This is what I wanted to do. And you know what? Those suckers lasted me for like 5 years. Do any shoes last that long? And also, my siblings totally have me to thank, because since I broke the ice, everybody else was able to get Doc Martens, because they finally were like, oh, these are actually like really good shoes. I was like, yes, they are.
That's
You're
funny.
welcome, siblings.
That's funny. My dad was so uninvolved.
Okay.
I don't know how to explain it. I mean, he was a great dad, but he was like, with that kind of stuff, he just let my mom take.
I feel like that would be better.
Yes, because it's kind of their thing anyways. But like one thing that my
Yeah.
mom, we never bought stuff that wasn't on sale. She might go buy us something nice, but it had to be on sale. We never paid full price for anything. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you said those were
Nothing
on
wrong with that.
sale.
You can find great stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. It's funny. And we had like this family in our ward that dressed their kids super nice. And my mom would take us to their garage sale the night before they would have a garage sale, and she would buy like everything. She was
Not a
frugal,
bad idea.
but she cared about fashion.
Yeah. See, I love it. Yeah.
It's funny.
I think the most fashionable I was when I would get a box of hand-me-downs from my cousin, who was a couple years older, because her family was loaded, and they would send her clothes that were too small to me. And that was always so exciting, because they were
Yes.
so nice clothes.
Yeah, that's how it
Yeah.
was with this family. It was like we got their hand-me-downs from their garage sale and they were fancy. They were,
Yeah. Yeah.
yes, an esprit and like whatever else.
Yeah. All the things, all the fashion, all the name
Yeah,
brands.
I love it.
So funny. I totally forgot about the spree. I don't know if it was as big of a deal when
I'm older.
I was going through school. Okay, chapter 26, the story club is formed. Going back to normal life after the concert was a lot more difficult than anybody expected. And there were some people who like had these weird little feuds because of it and fights and things, which was kind of funny. One thing that Diana and Anne decide to do is to form a story club, because Diana is always like, Anne, you have such an incredible imagination. And Anne's like, let's help you work on yours. The way to do that is just keep coming up with stories. And so this is so funny. I just have to briefly tell the story that Anne comes up with. It's the story of Geraldine and Cordelia, who are best friends. And of course, that's what their names are. They are just inseparable best of friends. And then Bertram DeVere came to their native village and fell in love with the fair Geraldine. I love this. He saved her life when a horse ran away with her in a carriage and she fainted in his arms, and he carried her home 3 miles, because you understand the carriage was all smashed up. It's like all of Anne's romantic fantasies smashed into one story. So Bertram falls in love with Geraldine and proposes marriage to her, and she accepts. And her acceptance is a page long, of course. But Cordelia is so jealous because she's in love with Bertram. And so there's this moment when Geraldine and Cordelia are on a bridge, and Cordelia decides to push her off the bridge into the river. And Bertram sees this and he jumps into the river after Geraldine. And then he remembers he doesn't know how to swim. And so he and Geraldine drown in each other's arms. They both die, because that's the most romantic way to end a story, of course, because Anne would much prefer to end a story with a funeral than with a wedding.
Oh my
God.
So
there we are. It's hilarious. And Cordelia ends up in the lunatic asylum. So it's great. And the girls decide to put together this little story club. And of course, boys are not invited. All their closest cute friends join, and they each have to write a story each week, and they get up and they share the story, and everybody sort of debates about it, talks about it. And Anne says that she, you know, whenever they need an idea, she gives them an idea for a story, because she's got millions of ideas. And all the girls sort of have their own little trademark. Ruby Gillis is very sentimental. Jane's stories are extremely sensible. And Diana, everybody dies. There's lots of murders. She's like, I don't know what to do with this character, so I'm going to kill them off. So it's really funny. Marilla doesn't think this is a good way for them to spend time. This is one of those things that I'm like, all right, have we just gotten way off course? Because I think it's a brilliant way to spend time. I wish more kids would spend their time this way. It's amazing. But she's like, I never even opened up a novel, you know, when I was growing up. And Anne was like, well, we always put a moral in our story. And she said, I have even shared a bunch of my stories with Mr. and Mrs. Allen, you know. And she's like, they do laugh at all the wrong parts, but they always really like my stories. It's probably because they're so outlandish and hilarious. She says, Anne says, say, I hope I shall be a little like Mrs. Allen when I grow up. Do you think there is any prospect of it, Marilla? I shouldn't say there was a great deal, was Marilla's encouraging answer. I'm sure Mrs. Allen was never such a silly, forgetful little girl as you are. It's so funny, because the truth is every little girl has a mischief. Anne just seems to be prone to a lot of unluck and so much imagination. She's just wild. And also the fact that Marilla responded that way, when Marilla just absolutely adores Anne. And we get some more of that in some later chapters. So,
yeah. That was one of my questions. And I've been trying to think of anybody. Like, was there somebody when you were a kid that you just idolized and you wanted to be just like them? I mean, she says that. She says, I'm trying to be as much like Miss Allen as I possibly can, for I think she's perfect. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Allen thinks so too.
So cute. That's really cute.
I'm like trying to think. I mean, yes, there was like, I can remember leaders at church that I would like, young women's leaders or something that I would watch and just want to be just like them. I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess that's all I can think of. Not anybody in particular, but yeah, as little girls, I think that's what we do. We just watch everybody, and or teachers. I think Sydney does that a lot with her teachers. She loves teachers. And that's why she wants to be one.
So. Yeah, which is awesome. I think that's wonderful. It means they were.
The other thing I thought was really funny was Miss Josephine Barry. They write this. They send her the stories to her, and she wrote back that she'd never read anything so amusing in her life. And they says that kind of puzzled us, because the stories were all very pathetic, and almost everybody died.
I know. Because that's the thing. It's the girls take it so seriously, and all the adults are reading them, and they probably do just love them, and they're just hilarious. And the fact that like everybody dies, you have to imagine that their ends are very tragic and dramatic. And so I love it. I think it's funny.
We read Persuasion for our book club last, it was Thursday night. We were talking about some people who had watched the movie. I hadn't watched it. I watched it yesterday and it was delightful. I loved it.
You'll have to tell me which version.
It's the Netflix version. It was so delightful. I just loved it. And cool. Some people don't like it, but I thought it was really cute. But like Nan, our friend Nan was watching it with her husband, and he was like, he said he looked at her and he's like, is this a parody? No, but it was funny. Like, it just reminds me of this because it's like they're totally serious, and the adults are like, is this a joke?
Oh,
I could laugh for hours about this. It's so funny.
I know.
So, chapter 27, Vanity and Vexation of Spirit. I love her chapter titles. Marilla is on her way home from a meeting, and she's looking forward to Anne being, oh my gosh, she's looking forward to Anne being there and having a warm fire ready for her with tea and dinner. And she's walking home and she's thinking like, gosh, this is so much better having her here, and I'm looking forward to it. And she walks in the house and there's no Anne. No tea,
yeah,
no fire. And so she's in there and she's like preparing everything herself, and she's just getting more and more and more angry about it. And she says some things about Anne. I don't think I highlighted them, but she says some things about Anne, like being irresponsible or whatever. And she's like, Mrs. Lynde had just said these exact same things about Anne in the meeting she was at. And Miss Stacy had like kind of stood up for her. And Marilla's like, if Miss Stacy hadn't have stood up for her, I was going to. But now she's saying the same things at home that Mrs. Lynde was complaining about. But so then she also realizes, after thinking through all of that, that it's not really like Anne to be disobedient. Like, she's really been responsible and better lately. And so she's like, this is really strange. So Marilla ends up going upstairs, and that's when she finds Anne face down on her bed. Anne is like, tells Marilla, I'm in the depths of despair. Go away. Like, don't want you around. And Marilla like orders her to get up and tell her what is going on. So at that point, Anne kind of slides off the bed, I think. And Marilla can see that there is something very, very wrong with her hair. Let's see. It says, Anne Shirley, what have you done to your hair? Why, it's green. Green it might be called if it was an earthly color, a queer, dull, bronzy green with streaks here and there of the original red to heighten the ghastly effect. Never in all her life had Marilla seen anything so grotesque as Anne's hair at that moment. And Anne says, yes, it's green. I thought nothing could be as bad as red hair, but now I know it's 10 times worse to have green hair. Oh, Marilla, you little know how utterly wretched I am. So she finds out and confesses that she had dyed her hair. And I love this too. Marilla says, you dyed your hair? Didn't you know it was a wicked thing to do? Here we go again with what you were talking about.
Yes. Yeah.
Making up these rules. She said, yes, I knew it was a little wicked, but I thought it was worthwhile to be a little wicked to get rid of red hair. I counted the cost, Marilla. Besides, I meant to be extra good in other ways to make up for it.
Fair enough.
She thought through it, but Marilla says, well, if I decided it was worthwhile to dye my hair, I'd have dyed it a decent color at least. I wouldn't have dyed it green. But anyway, so what had happened is a peddler had come by, and Anne knew that it wasn't okay to let him in, but she had went out on the porch and looked at his stuff. He told her this long story about like how he was trying to save money to get his wife and his kids to come over from, I think it was from Germany. So he shows her the stuff, and she cannot resist the hair dye because it was supposed to make her hair raven black. And he'd even sold it to her for less money. He'd sold it to her for 50 cents instead of 75 cents. And he's like, oh, at this point, I'm just giving it away. So then she says, oh, Marilla, what shall I do? I can never live this down. People have pretty well forgotten my other mistakes, the liniment cake and setting Diana drunk and flying into a temper with Mrs. Lynde, but they'll never forget this. They will think I am not respectable. Oh, Marilla, what a tank. I love this because it's such a famous line. What a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. I thought it was really cute.
Yeah, it's really good though. Good.
I know. I think that all the time. What a tangled web we weave. Okay, so every day for a week, she shampoos her hair. But the peddler was right about one thing, and that was it was permanent. He was wrong about the color, but right about it being permanent. Diana is the only one that knows about this, and so she really does keep her secret. And then eventually, Marilla and Anne decide that they're just going to have to cut her hair off. It says it had been necessary to shingle the hair as closely as possible. The result was not becoming. To state the case as mildly as may be, Anne promptly turned. So she, in her room, she turns her mirror around so she can't see herself. And then later she decides that her punishment is going to have to be that she looks at herself. One thing I think is funny is in the movie, of course, they don't shear her head like up
right
to her scalp. They just show it kind of shoulder length, maybe. But like in the book, yeah. I mean, they cut it to her scalp, probably.
Yeah. Well, and you realize there's no way, because in the movie, yeah, it makes it look really cute and you can't see any green. And you realize there's no way that they'd be able to cut it shoulder length and not see the dye still. The whole point was to get rid of the dye completely. And so they said that they shingled it, which I imagine means it's extremely choppy and very close cropped. So, yeah, I think it was pretty awful.
One time Sydney cut her hair when she was about 3. And she had these two little ponytails like on the sides. And she cut them off. And then she went right in her forehead and did the big snip. And I mean, I cried. I sent her to my mom's for like a week. I had just taken a picture of her like not 2 or 3 weeks before we had gone hiking. And I'd taken this picture of her. And I was like, you are beautiful, child. And your hair is so beautiful. And then she chopped it all off. It took about 3 years to recover from it. It was so awful.
Oh my gosh.
It was so awful. Wow. It was so awful. She has the best hair. Like thick, dark.
Yeah, she really does. She has beautiful hair. Yeah.
Anyways, I was so bad at her. I couldn't look at her, so I sent her to my mom for like a week because I just every time I looked at her, I cried. It was so bad. That's why you should always watch your kids. Don't have scissors out. But the last part of this is Josie Pye tells her that she looks like a scarecrow. And she's like, well, I guess that was part of my punishment too. And then she tells Marilla that she is done trying to be beautiful. Marilla is laying down because she has a headache. Anne asks her if she's talking too much. And she says, as for your chatter, I don't know that I mind it. I've got so used to it, which was Marilla's way of saying that she liked to hear it. Marilla's starting to like it. And it's funny because like in the beginning, remember when she doesn't say a lot and Marilla's like, this isn't natural. This is weird. And so probably Anne talking all the time is just feels like when she's not talking, she's worried. There's something wrong.
Yes. Yeah, totally.
So the next chapter, 28, is an unfortunate Lily Maid. Now, Anne and Diana, Ruby and Jane are reenacting a scene from a poem by Alfred Lord Tennyson. And this is where they send this corpse down the pond or I don't know. There's like a kind of a current in it in a barge. So Anne is upset that, well, Anne doesn't want to play the part of Elaine because she has red hair, but then all the other girls are scared to death to float in this little boat and lay dead. So Anne is the one that ends up having to lay down in the boat. And I remember like in the movie, I mean, this part is just so in my mind, right? And this chapter is very close to the series. They like lay this piano something like a carpet or something on her. And they like place her arms over her chest and put some flowers in her hand. And she lays there looking dead. And the girls are like, you really look dead. It scares them. So they push her off and they're running down the bank to meet her where the boat is going to end up. Well, the boat starts to sink. And this is Mr. Barry's boat that she's in, laying in, sleeping. I wonder if she falls asleep. I don't think she does. I think it pretty quickly starts to bring water in. Anyway, so it starts to sink and she's like, what am I going to do? So she finds, it sounds like there's like places in the water where there's like piles of wood or something. I don't know. Is that what it sounded like
yeah.
to you?
When she says the pile. Yeah. I mean, it is similar to move to the movie where it's just like these big like pilasters, almost like columns coming okay. up out of the river that are just from tree trunks, basically.
So the boat sinks. She's in the middle of the water. And so she's clinging to this. Well, it says an old pile, but it's like a, whatever you said, like a post coming out of the yes. water.
Yeah.
And yeah. of course, she's like, what am I going to do? Right. Of course, who do you think comes by? It's Gilbert comes by in, can't remember whose boat he's in. But anyways, he comes by and he's like, she knows that she has to get in the boat with him. And so she does. And she explains to him what they're doing, that they were playing Elaine, which they had just done at school. So they're all aware of this story and he knows about it. Anyways, he takes her to the bank. He's like, okay, Anne, can we just be friends? Like, can we just be good friends? Let's like put this all behind us. Let's just be friends. She's like, absolutely not. She says later that she totally regrets what she had said there. But yeah. I mean, how many times when you were a kid did you do something as you're doing it, you know, you're just too stubborn to give in, right? And you know that you should, but you just can't. I think that's how she feels.
Oh, gosh. How many times now do I do that?
Oh, jeez. Yeah, so he asks her, like, can we just be friends? And she starts to replay everything in her head, how Gilbert had called her carrots and had, you know, embarrassed her in front of the whole school. And she said, it says she hated Gilbert Blythe and she would never forgive him. And then she says to him, no, I shall never be friends with you, Gilbert Blythe. And I don't want to be. And he's like, all right, I'll never ask you to be friends again, Anne Shirley. And I don't care either. And so he like goes off in his little boat and leaves her there soaking wet. And then the girls come up and they had been everywhere and they could not find anybody to help. Everybody was like gone. They come running up and they're like, we thought you were dead and we couldn't find anybody to come help. And then I think she does tell them about Gilbert helping her, doesn't she?
Yes, because they're like, oh, it was so romantic, Anne.
Yes. And then she says, don't ever say romantic to me again. So cute. Anyway, so they go back. She goes home to Marilla. She says, I've learned a new and valuable lesson today. Ever since I came to Green Gables, I've been making mistakes and each mistake has helped to cure me of some great shortcoming. And then she always lists all her mistakes. This time they're different. Like she adds in the brooch and the haunted wood and all that stuff. Marilla is like, she's like, I'm going to stop being romantic. And Marilla's like, I sure hope so. When you grow up, they stop being romantic. And then Matthew says, don't give up all your romance, Anne. A little of it is a good thing. Not too much, of course, but keep a little of it, Anne. Keep a little of it. When she dyed her hair, have you ever done something like that? Because I did. Like when I was about 15 or 16, my friend talked me into trying to dye my hair blonde with like grocery store dye, which when your hair is brown, doesn't work. My hair was like, it was a Saturday night.
You have to go through.
Yeah. Saturday night. And she dyed my hair and it was bright orange. I ended up like going to the mall to like this expensive salon, like the only one that would take you at the last minute, and having them dye my hair like dark or something to cover it up. And it worked for a little while, but then that dye like started to come out and then you could see the orange under. Oh my gosh.
That is really funny. I'm trying to think. I never even had my hair dyed or anything until I was, I think, a junior in high school, and a professional that she, it was a lady in our ward who did hair out of her home. She was really good and she gave me highlights. But other than that, I think I've dyed my hair like maybe two or three times and it's usually just highlights, but I never do it myself. I'm not that confident. However, I will say that Tate, my son, so he's a teenager. A bunch of the kids now are getting like frosted tips, which was totally a thing when I was in middle school and high school, because that's what Justin Timberlake had, you know, and you had to be like Justin Timberlake, whatever. They had asked a girl to do it and she was like, yeah, it'll be $100 each. They were like, what? And she's not even a professional. And I was like, Tate, he actually came to me. He's like, Mom, I do this. And I was like, sure, I can watch a YouTube video. I can learn how to do this. So I watched several YouTube videos. Okay. And I ended up with like five, I think it was five boys at my house.
Oh my gosh.
And this was a couple months ago. And we bleached everybody's hair. I had a couple of their friends that were girls come over. They wanted to be part of it. And we just had a bleaching party.
Did it work?
It worked. I followed all the instructions very carefully. I found the right step and it worked really well. A big thing is, you know, toner. I will say that there was one of the boys, he is one of Tate's good friends. He is Mexican and his hair is very dark black. I mean, like black. That's redundant to say dark black. His hair is black. And so he needed a much more powerful toner than what I had. And so his did turn out a little more orange. We didn't like do the entire head. It was just tips. So it wasn't like awful. His parents were like, we will pay you $300 to shave your head. I was like, dude, just take it. Good grief. Not going to offend anybody. I don't care. I think he chose not to. I think he wanted to keep the frosted. Okay, we'll put more toner in your hair. And he did. It still was orange, but that was the only one that was a little bit not great, but he didn't care. It was fine.
Sydney had her hair done like this week, and she said that her hair wouldn't take the toner, that the lady was like, her hair didn't want to take it. And I'm like, because we always joke with her that tell her that she's Hispanic. So we all have to tell her she totally is. Take the toner. She does not look like the other children.
That's really true. And like her little baby pictures, like it's wild.
Yeah. She's like, we have four of one kind and then we have her.
They're so funny. Yeah. And her hair is very, very dark. It's probably not quite black, but it is very dark.
No, it's dark. But I just thought that was funny that she was like, the lady tried like two different kinds of toner and had to use like this really strong one. I thought that was funny.
That's really interesting. Chapter 29 is called An Epoch in Anne's Life. And basically what happens in this chapter is that Diana and Anne are invited to Aunt Josephine's to stay for a couple of days, to go to the exhibition. And so I think the exhibition is a lot like our, you know,
a fair.
Fairs. And isn't it sort of like the great exhibition that like Prince Albert put together back in like the 1860s or something? I could be way off. It's just where like to see all the latest in industry and things that people are coming up with, and you kind of shop around and you experience all these things. It's like bringing together what's going on in the world, the latest and greatest type of thing, if I understand it correctly. Aunt Josephine wanted to take Diana and Anne to that, and Anne was like, there's no way Marilla's gonna let me. So Mrs. Barry goes and asks, and Marilla decides to let her go. And one note that I want to make here is that Marilla has started to make all of Anne's dresses more fashionable. She's like, and one of the things is just her pride, because she doesn't want Matthew going to Rachel anymore. So she's like, fine, I'll make them more fashionable. So Anne and Diana go, they stay with Aunt Josephine. And she is Miss Barry. So I believe that she is an old maid. She is. But she's very, very wealthy. And so her house is just, they're just in awe of her house. She has velvet carpet, silk curtains. They get to stay in her spare room, which was not as romantic as they had envisioned, but it was fine. And at the exhibition, it is like a fair too, in that people like put in their entries for different things and win prizes. And there was a good representation from Avonlea. A lot of people won things there. There's a big horse race. But here's something that kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, as far as their kind of interesting stand on enjoying things and their moral code. They went to this horse race. Mrs. Lynde wouldn't go. She said horse racing was an abomination. And Anne says, I don't think, though, that I ought to go very often to races, because they are awfully fascinating. It's always wrong to do anything. Oh, sorry. I'll come back to that in just a minute. But I thought it was interesting. I was like, so because something is fascinating, it must be wrong. Something that makes you kind of feel a thrill must be wrong. I don't think I can get behind that. But anyway, but she talks about Mrs. Allen and how she's kind of an extra conscience because she's like, I would never do something that I couldn't talk to Mrs. Allen about. And I think that's kind of good code to go by, which for everybody, that's kind of a good thing to think about. Like, don't do something you wouldn't want to tell a certain person about. Now, Mrs. Allen is a good person because she's very sensible and reasonable. You know, there's a difference between her and Marilla or Mrs. Lynde, who are very just like toe the line. Even they have very, very strange and strict rules, extremely pious. But Mrs. Allen is much more realistic and, but still is a good person.
It's interesting that she's afraid to, she doesn't want to tell her, not because she's going to be judged, because she's not going to be judged.
No.
Just because she admires her.
Yeah. Yeah. She doesn't want her to. Yeah. She wants to be like Mrs. Allen again. And so she doesn't want to do those things that make it seem like she's not getting there.
Right.
She talks about going to see this prima donna and how incredible her singing was. And eating ice cream at a fine restaurant at 11 o'clock. Diana says that she feels like she was made for the city. And Anna's like, I don't think so. She's like, I loved it. It was really fun. But I think that I like sleeping in the East Gable and thinking about the trees and the rustling of the wind outside and being out in the country. She gets home to Green Gables. She is so happy to be home. And I love this. Well, first of all, something Marilla says to her, she says, I'm glad you've got back, I must say. It's been fearful lonesome here without you, and I never put in four longer days. So there's her little admission that she totally missed Anne. And Anne says, I've had a splendid time, she says this to Marilla and Matthew. I feel that it marks an epoch in my life, but the best of it all was the coming home. She thought it was really sweet because that's the mark of a good home, right? Is that our kids can go out and have an amazing time someplace else. And they think about it and they love it. And that is wonderful, but they're so happy to come home. That's the kind of environment that I want to have in my home. That the kids love to go. They feel secure in going and exploring outside of the world because they know that their home is safe and good and it's there and they're happy to come home to it. Chapter 30, the Queen's class is organized. So Miss Stacy comes over to visit Marilla, and like I said, I'm going to kind of skip through quite a bit of this because a lot of it is just Anne talking and talking and talking and talking and talking and talking and talking, philosophizing about lots of things. Finally, and Marilla is like, well, Miss Stacy did come talk to me. She's finally like, I see plainly that you don't want to hear what Miss Stacy had to say. You're more interested in the sound of your own tongue than in anything else. And so finally, Anne is like, okay, I'm sorry. Just tell me. I really do. I just have so much to say, you know? And so Marilla says, well, Miss Stacy wants to run a class among her advanced students who mean to study for the entrance examinations to Queens. So basically, she's going to keep them an hour after school each day to study for those entrance exams. And this is a long-term thing. We're not talking a couple of months. We're talking like a couple of years. So this is quite the commitment. Marilla's like, look, this is a great thing. You know, you want to have that security. And Anne is like, well, that's going to be really expensive, isn't it? And Marilla says, look, when Matthew and I took you to bring up, we resolved we would do the best we could for you and give you a good education. I believe in a girl being fitted to earn her own living, whether she ever has to or not. You'll always have a home at Green Gables as long as Matthew and I are here, but nobody knows what is going to happen in this uncertain world. And it's just as well to be prepared. You can join the Queen's class if you like, Anne. She's really excited about that. And there are a bunch of them that are doing it, but Diana is not. She's not going to be studying for the entrance exam for Queens because her parents kind of have the opposite view that girl doesn't need to be doing that. There is quite a bit of competition going on in the Queen's class, especially between Anne and Gilbert. It used to be that Anne was always just like, okay, I can never let him get ahead of me. But now Gilbert is right there too. He's like, I don't want Anne to get ahead of me. And they have this, it's a healthy friction because they help each other just be incredible, really. Not that either of them are like wanting to do that, but it's the byproduct. So, and it does say, kind of like you alluded to before, deep down in her wayward feminine little heart, she knew that she cared. And that if she had that chance of the Lake of Shining Waters again, she would answer very differently when Gilbert had said, she really wanted to do that. But I think that she feels like her chance is gone. Summer finally comes and she literally throws her books in a chest and hides the key because she doesn't, her brain is tired and she wants to just enjoy her summer vacation. We do get an idea that Matthew's heart is having a hard time because there's been some times that Marilla has stayed away from an aid meeting because she's worried about Matthew. And that's a little bit of foreshadowing for the future. We get a conversation between Rachel and Marilla where Rachel says, "I must say, Anne has turned out a real smart girl. She must be a great help to you." "She is," said Marilla, "and she's real steady and reliable now. I used to be afraid she'd never get over her feather-brained ways, but she has, and I wouldn't be afraid to trust her in anything now." And I wanted this might be a little bit long, but I wanted to read this entire thing from Rachel here, because Rachel admits that she used to think that it was such a big mistake that they brought Anne. But now it's been a few years. She's 14 now. Rachel says, "I ain't one of those kind of people, Marilla, as can never be brought to own up that they've made a mistake. No, that never was my way, thank goodness. I did make a mistake in judging Anne. But it weren't no wonder, for an odder, unexpecteder witch of a child there never was in this world, that's what. There was no spur out by the rules that worked with other children. It's nothing short of wonderful how she's improved these 3 years, but especially in looks. She's a real pretty girl, got to be, though I can't say I'm overly partial to that pale, big-eyed style myself. I like more snap and color. But somehow, I don't know how it is, but when Anne and the other girls are together, though she ain't as handsome, she makes them look kind of common and overdone. Something like them white June lilies she calls Narcissus alongside of the big red peonies. That's what. I love it. They all just love Anne, and they recognize that diamond in the rough that she absolutely is. And that's something that I love about Lucy Maud Montgomery is she brought us this little piece of coal, and she's slowly chipping it away to where we are seeing this diamond emerge in Miss Anne Shirley. Love it.
And it's like her personality is making her more beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. She's so good. She's always looking for the good. She's always trying to be better. It's wonderful.
I love this book. My mother-in-law is reading it.
Yeah.
And she's like right up with us.
Oh, wonderful. Just
a couple chapters behind me. And I mean, this episode is not going to come out for like 3 weeks. And she's anyway up there. And she's like, "I can't put it down."
Cool.
So I agree. I'm like, you.
Yeah, it's so good. So delightful.
Okay. So next week we'll finish the book 31 through, I think it's 38 is the last. So 31 till the end. So have you had time to read?
So I've actually started a few books with my kids. Because I keep finding these wonderful books that I want to try, and they're either not on Hoopla or I have to put them hold on Libby. So for myself, I haven't been able to read much, but I do have, well, I'll just share one that I've been reading with my kids, because that way I can definitely have at least three for the next few weeks. They started three with them. One for history, one for geography, one for science. The one for geography, this is called The Land I Lost, Adventures of a Boy in Vietnam, which I just feel like there's not a whole lot of books about Vietnam, especially from a first person point of view. It's by Nguyen Quang Nguyen. I hope I did not butcher that. Basically, he lives before and during the Vietnam War. And so he just talks about all of his experiences. It's really, really fascinating. It's not a super long book, but the way that it's told, it's very engaging, but also very like, it can be graphic. It talks about the last thing that we read just a couple days ago was about fighting a wild boar and how that was a real threat to them. Like the boars and the tigers were kind of a big thing they had to worry about, and how like if a male was kicked out of its harem because there was a younger male that had come in, it was like, okay, well, you're done. Those were the worst kind, because all wild hogs were scary and dangerous, but an older male out on its own was the worst kind. And something I didn't know is that like their bodies get covered in sap. They like go up to trees and their bodies are covered in sap. And especially when they're older, so much sap, it's like amber, you know, all over them. So they have this like shield. The only place that it's not is on their neck, like the underside of their neck. They just like destroy people and animals. If you get in a fight with it, it will go for your abdomen and your chest and just kill people and dogs and everything. And so it talks about this fight they get in with this wild hog, and it is quite the ordeal. all the day-to-day living things that we just didn't know about. But that's why I love these kinds of books, and that's why I love our geography curriculum, because it has pointed us in the direction of these books that times and places that we wouldn't necessarily have known much about otherwise. So, yeah.
Wild boars, not something we worry about.
No. Nope.
That's crazy. I know. I was thinking when you're talking about it, all I keep thinking of is like Princess Bride with the, I think there's,
oh,
like
yeah,
some
the
kind of,
ROUS.
Yes. Which is funny. So my daughter's boyfriend owns a house and he has rats. And Sydney was babysitting their dog this weekend. And so she had to stay at the house and she was like scared because of the rats that they're in the garage. But anyways, David was telling me it's because somebody in the neighborhood has chickens. And we were driving over there the other day and there's a sign that says like 188 rats. And I was like, what does that even mean? It's how many they've killed, who this neighbor has killed, 188 rats. That is gross.
Oh my God. Gosh,
I mean,
yeah, it is.
Like, who has chickens and get rid of them because we don't need rats in this neighborhood. Like, that is so gross.
Oh my gosh, that is awful. Seriously.
I didn't know that chickens brought rats, but
me neither.
Sydney survived, though. She made it through. They came home today, so she survived the rats.
Oh my gosh.
I'm talking about Sydney a lot today. I don't know what's going on. That's really funny. Rodents of unusual size. And Sydney saw one in the before she was dog sitting. She saw one in their garage and she's like, it was huge.
Good grief. Well, there's also nutria there, and those things are awful.
So gross. And so
those big. Are rodents of unusual size. They're disgusting.
Yes. I haven't seen one in years, but yes. Ew. Gross. My great grandpa used to be in a nursing home down by the river and we'd see them all the time. Yeah, you don't usually see them around the river. So luckily they don't really venture out here. So I read a book called The Lost Ticket by Freya Sampson. And this was a really interesting book. So like all these, this guy, an older man who's like beginning to show signs of dementia is on this bus. And he tells this lady, Libby, who had come to stay with her sister because her boyfriend, she thought he was going to propose. And then he's like, oh, I decided I like this other girl. And so like, you need to move out because this girl's going to move into my house.
She's oh, wow. Like, okay.
All right. So she goes and stays with her sister and she's on the bus one day and meets this older man who has dementia. And he tells her about this time in 1962 when he'd met this beautiful girl who had red hair, like the lady there. And they had had plans to go on a date to the National Gallery Art Museum in London. But Frank, the guy, Frank, had lost his bus ticket and didn't have her number. And so he never saw her. And he goes on the bus every year or every day. I think it's every day looking for her. He never married. He did end up having like a child with somebody, but never married her. And so anyways, he's what? It's the number 88 bus. I don't know how old he is, but old enough to have dementia. So these strangers like band together to help him try to find this woman that he had met in 1962. It was a really cute book. I really liked it.
That sounds really cute.
They all become kind of family, you know? Lots of stuff happened with Libby. Her boyfriend is horrible. He does worse stuff than what he did in the beginning. Anyways, it was really good. You do find out kind of what happened to the lady, and it kind of all works out. So,
okay.
Light and fun. We're so happy you joined us for this episode. We hope you will join us next week as we discuss Anne of Green Gables by Lucy Maud Montgomery, chapters 31 through 38. If you have suggestions for books we should read and discuss, please email us at thebestbookspodcast@gmail.com. We would love it if you would leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and share our podcast with your friends. We want to inspire and encourage as many people as we can to read out of the best books.
As Thoreau says, read the best books first, or you may not have a chance to read them at all. See you next time.